Hello, everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and my guest this week is John Steele. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, James. Very well, thanks. Yes, very hot and very humid, so good to be talking about the J-League to take my mind off the sweating.
Yeah, well, last week we had Steve Fryer on, and he's been getting rave reviews, so no pressure. But you did pick some interesting games to talk about, so hopefully everything will be okay. And you will also get rave reviews. And the first time
for everything.
The first of those games was Viva and Nagasaki against FC Ryukyu. This was a very entertaining match. Nagasaki went ahead in the 23rd minute through Takashi Sawada. Cristiano Cross was dummied by Ryohin Yamazaki, and Sawada scored. He ran onto the ball and kind of got behind the defence. And then Nagasaki went 2-0 up just before half-time. There was neat play between Yamazaki and Cristiano, and the Brazilian scored via a deflection. However, Ryukyu got back into it in the second half. In the 58th minute, Takuya Hitomi was in the right place at the right time to turn in a Yuki Omoto shot after Sadam Suli bumped into Nagasaki keeper Gaku Harada and left him in a bit of a heap. I think it was a fair challenge, but Harada definitely came off worse. And then 10 minutes later, Hitomi got a second. Takuma Abe had a shot blocked, but he had the presence of mind and quick footwork to tee up Hitomi, who side-footed into the top corner. And then there was late drama. Ryukyu went ahead in the 89th minute. Sule with a towering header from 12 yards after a Nagasaki attack broke down. Unfortunately, he then took his shirt off to celebrate, which meant that he received a second yellow card, and Ryukyu had to play the last few minutes with just 10 men, and it looked like they weren't going to hang on, because in the first minute of stoppage time, Yohei Okazaki brought down Asahi Uenaka in the penalty area, but Dani Carvajal stepped up and was equal to the task, and Ryukyu won 3-2. Whew. John, what can you tell us about this game?
Oh, yeah, you're throwing me under the bus early doors. I know I picked the games, but yeah, it's hard to know where to start, isn't it? Lots to unpack here, James, I think it's fair to say. I think this was just a typical J-League match or J2 match in the sense that it was topsy-turvy, it was crazy. If you showed it to someone who doesn't watch the league regularly, they would have no idea which team was, fifth in the table and which team was bottom. That there wasn't really much to choose between the teams. I think... talking about Nagasaki, first of all, they had some interesting rotation in the squad for this game, didn't they? And I think Ryohei Yamazaki is a really good striker, but it is hard for me as a neutral when I see that he is starting up front. It's hard to shake the feeling that it's a bit of a it's a downgrade. It's rotation and some fringe players coming in. You also mentioned goalkeeper Gaku Harada. I think that was his debut for Nagasaki, although he's played J-League games before elsewhere. So I wonder if there's a sense that that rotation meant that Nagasaki were perhaps taking Ryukyu a little bit lightly, or they thought this was a good game to maybe give players a bit of a rest. But that seemed to be vindicated, didn't it, in the first half. As you said, they were 2-0 up at half-time and fairly cruising with well-taken goals from Sawada and from Cristiano, who had a really good game. And then, yeah, like you said, from the 58th minute onwards, it was classic J-League. Ryukyu suddenly got a foothold in the game. I agree with you. I thought that was a kind of... It really was just a coming together between Sully and Harada. I don't think it was a foul, although obviously Harada was hurt, but luckily he was okay and could continue. And Takuya Hitomi is a player that's just not been on my radar at all season. And suddenly he scores and then he equalises a few minutes later, 10 minutes later. It's amazing that you use the phrase presence of mind to describe Takuma Abe's assist for that goal, because I have exactly the same phrase in my notes as well. So it's more evidence that we're both very smart or both going mad. I don't know. But yeah, I agree. I think most players, Abe's shot was blocked and then the rebound came straight back to it. Most players would just immediately kind of hack at it again, wouldn't they? And I include myself in that bracket. But Abe just seemed to enter bullet time for a moment, didn't he? There's a reference for the younger listeners. And yeah, just rolled it back for Hitomi and then it was 2-2. And then the J League dial was turned up to 11 as we entered stoppage time. Sully scoring what proved to be the winner, taking his shirt off, realizing he was in trouble, trying to get it back on, and then being shown a second yellow card and being sent off. Yeah, I think it's just one of those things. I mean, he's obviously excited and in the heat of the moment, made a bad selection. But yeah, the rules are rules, James, as we talked about in the green room. A bit beforehand, so he had to go. And then there was another kind of astonishing twist with that penalty. I think, yes, as you mentioned, Ryohei Okazaki, he pulled Uenaka's shirt inside the box. He protested his innocence, but I'm not sure. It was quite an audacious attempt to claim he hadn't done anything wrong. The replays clearly showed he had hold of Uenaka's shirt. Then Uenaka's not really been in the best form recently. He's been snatching at chances in the highlights that I've seen. He's not been as deadly as maybe he has been sort of earlier in the season, or when he kind of burst onto the scene last year. So I was quite surprised that he took the spot kick, although I suppose that was inevitable after he'd won it. But yeah, amazing save by Carvajal. And yeah, Ryukyu, I mean, they're bottom of the table, but they're level on points with the team in second bottom, which is Gunma. They've only got one defeat in seven. It's starting to look like the great escape is on. Isn't it? And for Nagasaki, they're in six, which is okay, I guess, but no wins in three. And with 11 rounds left, I think they're 10 points adrift of automatic promotion. So this was a very damaging defeat for them. 2-0 up at halftime at home to the bottom team. I'm sure the players have had to sit down and watch the full match, before training this morning. So they might still be wondering how they lost. But well done to Ryukyu, fantastic fight back from them. And perhaps we won't say the sky's the limit. That might be hyperbolic, but you wouldn't bet against them sort of surviving relegation at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think it seems like they've got so much belief now since Nacho Fernandez took over. I mean, the first game or two, they were not so good, but since he's managed to really get time with the squad and also bring in a few new players, they've really kicked on. They're on this excellent run, which I think also is making the decision to stick with the previous manager, Kina, for so long. It makes that look even worse every week. They're good results, and then that decision to keep him on, it looks so foolish. They should have got rid of him sooner, or not appointed him permanently at all. They should have maybe got someone else in at the start of the year. I also think that it's a really great recovery, not just from the first half of this game, but from last week as well, to lose 5-2. Although they almost got back into it at one point against Colford, but they ended up conceding a couple of late goals after having such a terrible start. I think it's really promising signs. I think also Fernandez made a really good decision to reinstate Carvajal as the number one goalie. Taguchi is okay, but there were a lot of times earlier in the season where he and the defense seemed to have like communication problems, and they'd lose possession and concede goals and things like that. And that doesn't seem to be happening with Carvajal. Plus, he's pulling off some amazing saves. Plus, he saved a stoppage time penalty. So I think he's definitely vindicating the decision to make him the number one again. I also think they're doing some good transfer business. With Sule is scoring goals. Kelvin is involved a lot. They've got this guy, Kohei Kato, who looks interesting. He came on as a sub in this match. And also, I think now timing's right because Abe came back from injury recently, and he's a really, really good player. Kusano and Kiyotake should be back soon as well, which is more, for the attack. I guess the idea is going to be just score as many goals as you can.
More firepower.
Yeah, they're not strengthening the defence. But yeah, this was a really good a good comeback from them. And it's like James was saying the other week, you go to the goal and you'll score. He says it on Twitter, so go to the goal and you'll score. And that's what they did. All three of their goals came because players would go into the front of the net. There were none of this sort of like long distance efforts. This was all inside the area. So they seem to have a focus and a purpose and a plan. And it seems to be working quite well.
I think just oh, sorry, James, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, what I thought was interesting was the way that in the first half, Nagasaki were really, really good. And in the second half, suddenly nothing worked for them. Whereas in the first half, Ryukyu, they weren't bad, but things weren't clicking. And then it switched around completely after half time, and everything was working for Ryukyu. And in Nagasaki's attacks were breaking down really easily. I don't know why. I don't know what changed, but it was interesting the way it kind of flipped.
Yeah, no, I think that is true. It really was cliche alert. It was a game of two halves, wasn't it? I think if you'd said to anybody at halftime, Ryukyu are going to win this, you might have not been allowed to watch the rest of the game for being silly. So it was amazing that they came back and got the 3 points. I think why I've started to feel like they might end up surviving this season is, first of all, they have a pretty good squad. It's something we've remarked on time and time again when we've spoken about them on the pod, that group of players should probably be in mid-table minimum, and shouldn't be kind of slumming it at the bottom. I also think consistency is going to be the key. Like you mentioned, they had that really heavy defeat, as it turned out, in the end at Kofu last week, right? 5-2, and some of the goals they let in were kind of old school Ryukyu, and that's the kind of defeat that could have sapped all their confidence and kind of put them back to square one. But nope, they're back at it in the next game. It's all gone, and they're back to normal. And I think even having the guy that's been the talisman the last couple of weeks, Sully, having him sent off right at the end of this game, it feels like a setback that will just be something they can overcome in the next game now, because they have that confidence and that consistency. Whereas for other teams, having the guy that's been your main goal threat missing would seem to be a massive problem. I think it's like you mentioned with the other forwards that they have available, it's not going to be the end of the world if he's not available for a game. So I think all of those factors put together mean that they're in a pretty good position for the last 11 games of the season. And for Nagasaki, I think, I don't know, I'd have to ask Daniel about this, Daniel Hartman, but I think 10 points off the top two with 11 games to play, I think that means automatic promotion's off the table, probably, and they just have to kind of regroup and make sure they get enough points to finish in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think automatic promotion is probably beyond them, but the playoffs, they should be all right for playoffs, but it's pretty close. There are a couple of teams just behind them, so it's not definite. And this is the second loss in a row. So yeah, and winless in three because they drew the match before. So I think they're having a bit of a wobble, and they need to sort it out and sort it out quickly before they drop out and they miss out again. All right. Yeah. Good. Okay. Let's move on, shall we, to another very entertaining game involving a team at the top and a team at the bottom. This one was Vegalta Sendai against Omiya Ardija. And Omiya went ahead in the 11th minute thanks to Yutaro Hakamata. A corner was headed high up by a Sendai defender, not cleared, and it was hooked overhead back towards goal by an Omiya player. And Hakamata, who was on the shoulder of the last defender, was able to score from 6 yards out. And then, a minute later, Omiya scored again. Atsushi Kawata. This was straight from the restart. Sendai lost the ball really quickly. Someone played a long ball forward for Shinya Yajima, and his cross was headed in by Kawata. And then, in the 34th minute, Omiya went 3-0 up. This was Yajima. A neat passing move, and Yajima had loads of time to place his shot. So Omiya were 3-0 up at half-time, but being Omiya, it wouldn't be... Wouldn't be Omiya without them making things a bit nervous for their supporters. And in the 64th minute, Sendai pulled one back. Motohiko Nakajima scored from distance. And then in the 89th minute, Yasushi Endo scored a back post header. He barely even needed to jump for that. It was really strange how just kind of relaxed everyone was when he scored that goal. But Omiya held on to win 3-2. Another massive win for them. And they're up to 19th now. 4 points ahead of Ryukyu. John, talk us through this one, if you can.
Yeah, this was another one. I mean, if you know, Nagasaki 2 Ryukyu 3 was pretty bonkers, and I think Sendai 2 Omiya 3 gave it a run for its money. We were talking in the green room beforehand about how there were a couple of games postponed over the weekend due to the typhoon, and the nine fixtures that did go ahead, it almost seemed like the players were trying to kind of make sure that the average goals per game stayed the same, as if there were 11 matches. You know, the goals all over the place, and this game was no exception. Sendai, I still don't know what to make of this team. They're obviously a very free scoring side, as we've discussed before. Defensively, they're pretty wretched, and I get kind of the same. This is why I've started to think I'm off topic completely. I apologize. I think Niigata are going to be champions because they are the only team that can do defense and attack together. Sendai can attack only, and Yokohama FC can defend only, if we take the last couple of games out of the equation. But Niigata can do both, and that's why they'll be champions. I mean, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I watched most of this game live at home with my son, who was supporting Sendai initially because they'd beaten Yokohama. Sorry, Omiya had beaten Yokohama before. When I pointed out we actually wanted, from a Yokohama FC perspective, we actually wanted Omiya to win, he switched quickly. So happy. He was happy at half time after this sort of mad first half with Omiya going in 3-0 up. It's amazing. Again, you used the word hooked to describe Shunsuke Kikuchi putting the ball back into the box for the first goal. I've used the phrase hooked back into the danger zone in my mind. So I don't know if we're going to end up on the Football Cliches podcast before long, I think, James. But then it was 2-0 Atsushi Kawata, and then the third goal was very confidently set up by Kawata, dispatched by Yajima. Something we've talked about with Omiya before is how they have these really, really good quality players who just don't produce enough or don't produce anything in a lot of cases. But in the last couple of games, a player who I really sort of like, Kanji Okunuki, has been producing a lot. In the game against Yokohama FC the week before, the guy, I've forgotten his name now, Masaya Shibayama, is it?
He scored two,
so he was producing. And it was the same in this game. Like, you know, Yajima is a really good player. And he you know, set up one and scored one here. Hakamata, the centre back, was booed mercilessly by the Yokohama FC supporters because he left Yokohama FC to go to Omiya last year. But he was also displayed quite, for a central defender, I thought his finish was actually quite skillful. You mentioned it was only from 6 yards out. I think that's fair, but it was a volley over his shoulder, which a lot of players would get wrong, I would suggest. So that was a good finish as well. So Sendai looked absolutely shell-shocked at half-time. That was nobody expects to be 3-0 behind a home to Omiya, do they? So it was crazy. But then, as you mentioned, I think you used the phrase casual or relaxed defending. I think that's what we Omiya are quite famous for, that in seasons past and this year. So yeah, Sendai got a goal back, and then suddenly it was 3-2, wasn't it, right at the end with that Endo header. But I thought Omiya, just like they were against Yokohama FC the week before, they made a heavy weather of it at times, but they were good value for the win. They scored three goals, and yeah, that suddenly things look a lot brighter for them as well. You mentioned, okay, they're 19th. That's not great, but they're 4 points clear of the relegation zone, and they're scoring goals, and that is a positive. Although defensively they are a bit of a wash at times. For Sendai, they're third in the table. That's the good news, but they've only won one of the last four, and that was the game against Kanazawa, which we won't talk about, James. But they were helped on their way to that victory. Sendai are just wobbling at the wrong time for me, and I do think their defense has not looked particularly solid all year, and I just think I'm nailing my colours to the mast tonight, but I think Niigata are going to finish in the top two and probably be champions. I think it's a toss-up between Sendai and Yokohama for the second spot. Neither of them particularly convincing at the moment, it has to be said. But Yokohama's sort of tighter defence might give them the edge, because Sendai just letting in, like you mentioned, they conceded the first goal here, but then the second one came within about 30 seconds, didn't it? Possibly less. That's something that they've had a dodgy defence for 31 rounds. I'm not sure if it's something they're going to fix in the last 10 or so games, but they have to try, because it could end up costing them, really.
Yeah, I was just looking at the table. They've in, of the top teams in the top half, they've got the second worst goals against. They've conceded 43. The worst is Tokyo Verdy in 11th. They've got 45. So, yeah, that's a good point. I thought, yeah, maybe this result could be quite damaging to their top two hopes, because, I mean, yeah, losing to a team so low down in the table, albeit they were excellent, particularly in the first half. And St. Laurent, they beat the team that was top last week as well. So, you know, give them some more credit. We gave them a lot of credit last week. We'll give them some more this week. Two excellent results. And what was good about this one, I thought, was that they started strongly again, which they did last week. But last week they started strongly and then they conceded very soon after scoring. But this time they scored soon after scoring and then they scored again, which they had not been able to do enough this year, which suggests perhaps things are moving in the right direction for them, although this could just be a false dawn and it could come tumbling down in the next few weeks. I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you that Shinya Yajima was very effective in this game. I also think Koshimura in goal was really good. He made some really good saves. One in particular, right at the start,
it was Ryoma Kida.
Yeah, he managed to dribble through a defender, but Shimura came out really well to kind of block the shot from quite close.
I thought it was quite brave to die. But if you're only a goalkeeper this season with the injury record of only a goalkeepers, I would be nervous about doing anything, you know, any contact with an opposition forward. So yeah, I thought that was very brave goalkeeping.
Yeah, and also I think although they conceded. I would say Sendai's first goal was pretty good, a good strike. The second goal was pretty soft, but I think overall Omiya defended pretty well in this game for the most part, as they did last week as well in patches. Their pressing last week was really good, and that's what created chances and stifled Yokohama FC in this game. I'm not sure if that was the same because I wasn't able to watch the whole game, but I think, they scored three and they only conceded two. So obviously the defence did all right.
I wonder if
another day earlier in the season, they would have scored three and conceded three or four. So
yeah. Well, I wonder if Naoki Soma, who's in charge of Omiya right now, obviously has a reputation for being a kind of defence first and quite a dour coach. I wonder if he has had a look at his Omiya squad and thought, well, I would like them to play sort of Catenaccio, but looking at the resources available, he's realised the defence can't really be relied upon to shut teams out. So I think perhaps we're seeing a slight circumstances have dictated a slight evolution in what he's asking from the players. I think he's realised I've got a couple of excellent wingers, two or three excellent wing players and good forwards. He's like, well, okay, you guys just try and outscore the opposition and the defence. We'll sort that out in the winter. I don't know, but it does seem as though he has been a bit more. He's kind of let the sort of front six off the chain to attack, and the defence is doing what it can.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be Omiya's strength, really, because they've just got to be a bit gung ho in attack and hope that they can outscore the opposition, because the scoring record actually is pretty good of the teams in the bottom seven. Ryukyu have scored 35 and Kanazawa 35 and Omi have got 33. So that's not bad. I mean, and Kanazawa have barely scored for the last 6 weeks. So
Kanji Okunuki would get a game at Kanazawa, wouldn't he?
I think I would get a game at Kanazawa, which is why I'm going on Sunday. No, it's Saturday, isn't it? We've gone Sunday. I think Omi are I don't think we can say that they're, you know, they're definitely going to be all right because they've had these two really good results. Because
Omiya can't be trusted. A team that can't be trusted.
We've seen them get these kind of, well, maybe not these kind of good results, but we've seen them get good results and have these good performances. But then everything goes back to being rubbish again. So I don't know if we can, you know, we can't definitely say they're going to be okay, but things seem to be moving in the right direction. and that bodes well for.
Well, I think Omi and Ryukyu both have to kind of throw in another overused pod word, but it's true, they have momentum now, and Gunma, Iwate, and sorry to say, but Kanazawa, that's momentum is not, they don't have it, do they, at the moment? So that could be critical in the running.
Yeah. Too much Kanazawa talk, so let's move on to the next game.
that's how I move you on without you realizing it. If I just keep saying the word Kanazawa, you move me on to the next game.
I'm not going to mention them in the roundup. I'm going to pretend that they didn't play. The other game that you chose was more towards the top of the table. It was a top half clash, Jeff United against Magda Zelvia. This one was decided by penalties, really. Dudu put Magda ahead in the 18th minute. There was a shot that his shot basically wasn't saved by Shota Arai. It probably should have been saved. I think he got a hand to it. As a kind of unusual mistake from him. But in the lead up to that goal, there was a good link up between the front three of Vinicius Araujo, Shusuke Oda, and Dudu. And then in the 52nd minute, Jeff drew level. Thiago De Leonso scored a penalty after a Rui Tsuyoshi shot hit a defender's arm. A bit harsh, perhaps, because the arm was in front of the body. But I think these days, anything that hits an arm in the box is a penalty. So let's not get into that whole discussion again. And then there was another penalty right at the end. In the 87th minute, Dudu was bundled over by a defender. But he got up and converted the penalty. So Machida won 2-1. John, what did you make of this one?
Yeah, I think I have to say, first of all, we you asked me to kind of select three games to kind of for our pick of the week from the weekend. And I thought with only nine games taking place, that would be easier. It was actually quite difficult to pick a third game because there were so many bangers, you know, as it turned out. I think, Sendai and Omiya, and Nagasaki Ryukyu, they were shoe-ins because they were 3-2 away wins where a lot happened. But for the third game, it was hard to pick. So I chose this one because for Machida, they didn't have their captain and kind of key midfielder Taiki Hirato in the squad for this game. I assume he's perhaps injured or perhaps it's COVID-related, I don't know. So I was curious to see how they would do without him because he is sort of the key to most of the things that they've been doing well this season. I was, you know, wondering who was going to sort of step into the hole that his absence created, and it turned out to be Dudu, didn't it? You mentioned for the first goal that he scored, there was a really nice kind of one-touch passing move that Machida put together to enable Dudu to kind of get free and shoot, and you kind of expect a player like Hirato to be instigating moves like that. He wasn't there, but a good flowing move like that still happened and produced a goal. I think that's good news for Machida. And the penalty that you mentioned, I agree. I thought the award was probably the wrong decision because it hit Kota Fukatsu, the defender, on the top of the arm, but there wasn't really anything he could do about it when the ball's blasted at him from a few yards away. But let's be honest, James, I think if that incident had been reversed, do you think Dudu would have been asking for a penalty? Or do you think Dudu would have been saying to the referee, oh, no, ref, don't give us a penalty, that's okay. So I think, you know, Machida, very easy on the eye, but also quite a whiny team. So I think they we can't overextend any sympathy, although I thought this probably was the wrong decision. Yeah, a really emphatic finish by Thiago De Leonso to make it 1-1. He is not the most convincing striker in open play. I think it's fair to say he's not quite done it for Jeff since coming in. But that I think that ball nearly broke the crossbar in half on its way in. So, yeah, fair play. He knows how to take a penalty at least. And, I think for the penalty that settled it late on, I think it was a foul on Dudu. I'm not sure it was, you know, I think the player just tripped him accidentally. I'm not sure who it was who bundled him over, I think. But yeah, he was tripped and he went down. It was a foul. And, he scored the penalty himself. So, yeah, Machida, a first win in three games for them, but it keeps them on the fringe of the playoffs in seventh. I think I've seen enough from them now to say that I think they'll be in the playoff mix until quite late in the season. I think we'll still be talking about them having a chance of getting into that top six with, you know, two games left. But I do think they might just miss out, even though they have a very talented team. But I think they'll be there on the very edge of the playoffs until the last minute, I think. Jeff, I mean, they're 6 points off the top six, and they have a game in hand coming up this midweek, don't they, against Kofu? But I think that's kind of a bit of a false position. I don't think they've quite got enough. If you look at the goal difference, especially goals scored, they're not really a playoff contender in that sense. And I think they're on one win in five, aren't they, form-wise? So I think for them, they've made some quite steady progress this season. For me, but I don't think they're going to... The playoffs might be something they can target for next year. And maybe if they finish in the top 10 this year, that'll be a good season for them. But I think for Machida, yeah, playoffs look possible if they can run into some form. But I think for Jeff, maybe next season might be the one to watch.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering about Machida. I think maybe they're too inconsistent. I mean, look at their last five. They've lost, win, loss, draw, win. But they, I mean, it's enough. They're on the fringes of the playoffs. But yeah, they might just miss out. They might manage to sneak in at the end. I don't know. They're really hard to judge. They've not really been a very convincing team, I don't think, this year. They've got these really good attackers that didn't have Hirata in this game, and they got Chongtese coming off the bench. They're very good. Plus the three who started, but as I know, they haven't really been convincing in a way that, you know, Okayama and Kumamoto and Nagasaki, since they got their new manager, have.
Mm.
For Jeff, yeah, 6 points off the playoffs is not an insurmountable gap. But again, I don't think they're consistent enough to make that up in the final 12 games, I think. It's another season for them of looking good in patches, but falling short in the end and finishing mid-table.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I still think, I mean, I'm just copying and pasting from previous pods here, so I apologise to listeners, but I think five of the top six places are already pretty much set. And I think it's going to be an almighty squabble over sixth place. And if Machida can be more consistent than Nagasaki over the last 10, 11 games, they might snatch it. Yamagata might snatch it as well. But I think, I don't know what order it's going to be, but I think the top five that we have now is probably our top five.
Mm.
I think sixth place is where the bums will be squeaking between now and the end of the season.
Mm. Yeah, I think so too. I think, maybe not top. I mean, Kumamoto are only a point ahead of Nagasaki, so they could miss out as well.
Mm.
I think it would be great if they finished in the top six. That'd be fantastic.
Mm.
J3, possibly into J1.
They're definitely there on merit. Definitely there on merit, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, Yamagata seem to be hitting form at the right time as well. So, and Oita are just drawing too many matches down in ninth they're not far away, but I don't think they can catch up with sixth, I don't think.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, that'll do for part one, I think. Don't go anywhere. In a second, I'm going to round up the rest of the matches from the weekend. Let's round up the rest of the games from round 30. Albirex Niigata moved to the top of J2 temporarily with a 2-0 win in Tochigi on Sunday, their first win in four. Both teams created chances early on, but it was Niigata's Koji Suzuki who opened the scoring in the 40th minute, receiving a pass on the edge of the area and shooting between two defenders and into the top corner. Midway through the second half, Tochigi's Yuki Nishiya had a chance to equalise, but his shot was saved by Ryosuke Kojima, who was called into action again a few minutes later to tip a Teppe Yachida shot over the bar. Having weathered that storm, Niigata got a second in the 86th minute as Soya Fujiwara ran onto a pass and side-footed a shot from the edge of the area. Tochigi lose for the second game in a row and a 16th, 8 points clear of relegation. Fagiano Okayama and Renofa Yamaguchi met for a high-scoring encounter at the City Light Stadium. Okayama were awarded a slightly odd penalty in the 7th minute. A free kick was lofted in from the right and went over everyone's head, but Okayama's Yasutaka Yanagi and Yamaguchi's Hirofumi Watanabe bumped into each other in mid-air, which caused Watanabe's arm to move and be hit by the ball after it had gone over his head. Thiago Alves scored the penalty. Soon after, Okuyama had another penalty. No doubt about this one, though, as Thiago Alves was tripped by Watanabe and Jordi Bois scored that one. Yamaguchi hit back 4 minutes later through a penalty of their own for handball as a shot hit a defender's arm. Yanagi got a yellow card for his protests and Kazuma Takai scored. And Yamaguchi thought they'd equalised in the 37th minute, but Tsubasa Umeki was offside. They did draw level in the 3rd minute of first half stoppage time when Kosuke Kikuchi headed in a free kick. Yasutaka Yanagi put Okuyama back in front in the 65th minute, rising above two defenders to head in a corner. Okuyama held on for a 3-2 win, which keeps them in 4th and Yamaguchi in 18th. They are winless in 7. Vanfore Corfu welcomed high-flying Raso Kumamoto to the JIT Recycle Inc. Stadium. The visitors should probably have gone ahead in the 10th minute when Toshiki Takahashi was brought down by Corfu keeper Kosuke Okanishi, but the goalie redeemed himself immediately by saving the penalty. Okanishi saved well from a Takahashi header 12 minutes later. And Kofu's first chance fell to Junma Miyazaki, but Kumamoto keeper Yuya Sato and several defenders scrambled well enough to keep him at bay. The host took the lead on the stroke of half-time, Motoki Hasegawa laying the ball off for Hidehiro Sugai to score. Kumamoto equalised on the hour. A ball over the top by Sō Kawahara was volleyed in by Takahashi. 7 minutes later, Rasa were in front. Yuhi Takemoto got his head to a free kick just before Okanishi. The lead only lasted 10 minutes though. Kazushi Mitsuhira was in the right place to collect a Yoshiki Torikai pass. It ended 2-2, a point that moved Kumamoto up to 5th and extends 13th place Kofu's unbeaten run to 6 games. Hot on the heels of the playoff places are Montedio Yamagata, who registered their 3rd straight win with a 4-1 victory against Zuigen Kanazawa. Akira Silvano Di Zaro opened the scoring as he got in front of his marker to head in a cross at the near post in the 17th minute. Kota Yamada doubled the lead 9 minutes later, helped significantly by Kanazawa's Shintaro Shimada, who lost the ball on the edge of his own area, fouled his opponent to concede a free kick, and then didn't follow the man he was supposed to be marking. Kanazawa pulled one back in the 68th minute after neat passing between Kazuya Onohara, Shion Niwa and Hiroya Matsumoto put the latter through on goal, but Yamagata's De La Torre scored the 2-goal lead 7 minutes later when he reacted quickest to a loose ball in the 6-yard box after a corner. Kanazawa had a penalty, but ex-Zeigen keeper Masaki Goto thwarted Niwa, and Thiago Alves piled more misery on the guests with an easy goal after a mix-up between Matsumoto and keeper Yuto Shirai. Yamagata are 8th, 2 points behind Nagasaki. Kanazawa dropped one place to 17th, with the worst form in J2. 5 straight losses, the last two both 4-1. Just 2 goals scored in those 5 games, and 17 conceded. Also chasing the playoffs are Oita Trinita, who travelled to the Naroa Otsuka Sports Park Pokhari Sweat Stadium to play Tokushima Vortis in a battle of draw specialists. And guess what? It finished 2-2, with Vortis coming from 2 goals down to salvage a point. Samuel scored first, taking a pass from Kazuki Fujimoto on the edge of the area and sending a shot in off the post. Tokushima could have had a penalty in the 35th minute when Oita's Pereira clattered through the back of Koki Sugimori, but the referee deemed he got enough of the ball. And just before half-time, Tsukasa Umesaki teed himself up with his back to goal and turned to volley Oita into a 2-goal lead. Tokushima halved the deficit 9 minutes into the second half in a slightly fortuitous fashion. Eiji Shirai's long-range shot hit 2 Oita defenders and fell to Shoto Fujio, who managed to shin it over the onrushing keeper, thereby giving himself a tap-in. Shirai got the equaliser in stoppage time. Impressively mulleted Kazuya Nishiya found him 10 yards out, and he waited for the nearest defender to commit himself before shooting round him and passed a motionless goalie. 2-2 then, Oita's 13th draw and 3rd in a row, Tokushima's 19th of the season and 6th in a row. Oita are 4 points off the playoffs. Blaublitz Akita continued their good run with an important 1-0 win at Iwate Gruja Morioka. Akita goalie Yudai Tanaka was called into action in just the 2nd minute to claw away a Masashi Wada header. Iwate had a lucky escape in the 65th minute when a low free kick from the left wing squirmed through everyone but was cleared off the line. The goal came in the 81st minute. Akita-born Koya Handa getting the last touch on a bit of penalty box pinball. There was another Iwate goal line clearance in stoppage time, this time from Daiki Kogure.
and this result sees Akita move up one place to 15th as they continue to edge away from relegation. Iwate are 20th on 30 points. Two Saturday games were postponed due to the typhoon. Mito against Tokyo Verdy was called off after lots of Verdy supporters had actually arrived in Mito, having been told at midday the game would go ahead. And no date has been announced for that one yet. Yokohama FC against Gunma was quickly rearranged for Tuesday night. It was unconvincing, but a ninth minute Saulo Mineiro header was just enough to give Yokohama a 1-0 win and move them back to the top of the table. Gunma had plenty of possession, 68% in the final 30 minutes actually, but couldn't do anything with it, although they might have had a penalty in the 73rd minute when Gabriel's outstretched arm blocked a cross, but strangely nobody seemed to notice or react to it at all. So Gunma remained 21st, level on points with Ryukyu and three behind Iwate. And that's round 31 taken care of. Next, John and I are going to preview round 32.
Welcome back, everyone. John's come back and he's going to help me take a look at the match day 32 fixtures. Most of the games are on Saturday the 20th. There are three games at 6 o'clock. Jeff against Tokushima, Yokohama FC against Okayama, and Niigata against Kumamoto. And then at 6:30, Ryukyu take on Yamagata. John, anything that looks particularly interesting to you in those four?
Yeah, I think quite a lot, to be honest. I think the Niigata against Kumamoto, Yokohama against Okayama, kind of they have a few parallels. It's the two teams who, at the moment, as we're recording, who are in the automatic promotion places against two teams in the playoff zone. Obviously, that might have changed a little bit because Yokohama FC against Gunma is coming up on Tuesday, and we listeners will know the result of that, and we don't as we're talking now. I think Niigata Kumamoto, I mean, going away to Niigata is pretty much the toughest away game around at the moment, isn't it? So I think Kumamoto will have to be at their best to get anything from that game. I mean, Niigata were very sort of impressive winning at Tochigi in the round before. Wait, did they won 2-0 at Tochigi last weekend? Is that right? Yeah, okay. Sorry. I'm with you. I'm still here. I'm with you. I'm with everyone. Yes. And Yokohama FC, depending on how they do against Gunma, there could be a lot of pressure on them for this game against Okayama. Okayama, very tidy and consistent team, as we know. And Yokohama FC's form over the last month or so have not been particularly good. They haven't really impressed, apart from a 4-0 win against Jeff. I think they've struggled in most of the other games they've played. So there is a sort of potential for a slip up from Yokohama FC, I think, in that game. And Ryukyu, we've mentioned how much confidence they have. They look transformed in recent weeks. That Yamagata will be a really good test of that confidence, I think, because they're a very good attacking team, as we know. And Ryukyu's weakness traditionally has been at the back. So that has the potential to be a really good game as well, I think.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think, Ryukyu and Yamagata are both very confident teams, are both in form, and they're both, their target is slightly out of reach. Ryukyu are a few points off safety, Yamagata are a few points off the top six, so I think that will be a very interesting one. And Yokohama FC against Okayama is a chance for Okayama to put pressure on Sendai, I think, as well. If Sendai slip up again and Yokohama can get something, Okayama can get something from Yokohama, then that will shake things up in the top six as well. Okay, there are the rest of the games are at 7 o'clock on Saturday. Akita against Tochigi, Gunma against Sendai, Omiya against Machida, Kanazawa against Nagasaki, Yamaguchi versus Mito, and Oita against Iwate. Plus on Sunday the 21st, there's one match, Tokyo Verdy versus Kofu, is a 6 o'clock kickoff. John, anything take your fancy there?
Just looking at my notes, I noticed that I've missed out the Yamaguchi Mito game completely from my preparation. So I think that probably tells us all what I thought about that game. So we'll move on quickly. I think Gunma Sendai is interesting. Again, Gunma have got this game in hand against Yokohama FC that's already been played by the time the listeners hear this. So assuming that they've lost that game, there's a lot of, they'll really need to get some points against Sendai, whereas Sendai, on the other hand, they'll be wanting to both put pressure on Niigata and Yokohama FC, but also to kind of head off any challenge coming up from Okayama. So I think Sendai will be really up for that game. It should be a good one. Sendai always travel With a lot of away support as well, so potential for a big crowd and a good atmosphere at the game. And I think the other one, yeah, Nagasaki going to Kanazawa. Gloss over this one real quick, James, but Kanazawa in free fall at the moment, as we know. Nagasaki were in total control of the game against Ryukyu, 2-0 up at half-time, and then just completely imploded, ended up losing, even though they had a last-minute penalty that would have got them at least a draw. I'm very interested to see how they bounce back from that against Kanazawa, because there is a little bit of pressure on them now with the, you know, team sort of massing behind them, if you like, in 7th, 8th and 9th. So Nagasaki will be very keen to get the 3 points against Kanazawa, and Kanazawa will be equally as keen to get the points, but for very different reasons, of course.
Yeah, and also Kanazawa won't have Yohei Toyoda, Keita Fujimura or Shintaro Shimada, because they're all suspended for accumulated yellow cards, which won't help the cause. But on the other hand, they're going to do fireworks at half-time, so that'll be fun. I think there's a few other sort of interesting points from games. Like Akita against Tochigi is not a particularly glamorous fixture, but...
Don't know what you mean, James.
both those teams, I think, are probably safe, although Tochigi have lost their last two, whereas Akita are on the draw, win, draw, win. So they're going pretty well. I think they're moving towards safety. Akita, they're probably all right. Tochigi will need to end this losing run before it becomes a problem. I think it'll be interesting to see if Omiya can continue their good play again and incredible results against top teams, taking on Machida, having just beaten Sendai and Yokohama FC. And Oita against Iwate, or Oita need to turn draws into wins if they're going to try and get sixth or higher, whereas Iwate just need wins to stave off relegation. So I think, yeah, plenty of interesting things to look out for this weekend.
I think just on the Omiya match of the game, I mean, if Omiya can get something, that'll mean they'll have, let's say they draw, that 7 points from Yokohama, Sendai and Machida in consecutive games. That is a real platform to build on in terms of safety. And then now Kisoma, of course, is a former Machida manager, so he should have the inside track on a few of their players as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think that will be... Well, Omiya games generally are quite entertaining, so I think this one will probably be a good one as well. And it'll be worth keeping an eye on that. All right. Thanks, John, for your chat and analysis. It's good to get your thoughts on J2 as usual.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry, I forgot about the Yamaguchi Mito game.
It's all right. We didn't talk about it anyway. So sorry to Yamaguchi and Mito supporters. Although I will say that Yamaguchi are also looking a bit in trouble. They're one of the most out of form teams in the division, along with I think Gunma and Kanazawa or Iwate as well. So they need something from this game. But yeah, don't worry about that. Let's just go to bed. thanks for listening, everyone, and for downloading and streaming and retweeting and everything like that. And also thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We really appreciate your support. Don't go anywhere, though, because here comes Mike Innes with J-Talk Short Corner. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on a dramatic set of fixtures in Round 20, as well as previewing the Round 21 games coming up this weekend. First, a few items of J3 news since the last pod. Much transfer activity to report on. Kagoshima United have strengthened their promotion push with a pair of loan signings from J2, 32-year-old forward Jin Hanato from Tokyo Verdy and big centre-back Kenya Onodera, 24, from Tochigi SC. Another club fighting near the top of the table, Fujieda MyFC, have signed Tokyo International University defender Kotaro Yamahara as a specially designated player, meaning he's eligible to take part in J3 games during the remainder of this campaign. Kagoshima and Fujieda may have boosted their squads, but rivals Matsumoto Yamaga have lost captain and utility player Takayuki Mae. The 28-year-old has returned on a permanent deal to one of his previous clubs, Renofa Yamaguchi, while Matsumoto have made veteran defender Yuya Hashiuchi captain in Mae's place. And another player to depart Yamaga is fringe central midfielder Shusuke Yonehana, 24, who joins Vanfore Corfu on loan. Meanwhile, YSCC Yokohama say they've re-registered 30-year-old defender Takumi Nagasawa, who over the winter was deregistered with the club, indicating at the time the player was undergoing a lengthy period of rehabilitation following injury. Finally, FC Imabari say Misaki Haruyama has ended his loan spell with them and returned early to parent club FC Machida Zelvia. The 21-year-old forward has made only 3 substitute appearances in the league this season. Now on to the action, and there ended up being only 2 games played on Saturday the 13th of August, as the scheduled fixtures Azul Claro Numazu against Fujieda Mae FC and SC Sagamihara against Fukushima United were postponed on account of the typhoon conditions affecting the central part of Japan. Leaders Iwaki FC were, however, in action at Vanrare Hachinohe, where the J-League debutants brushed aside the hosts to consolidate their position at the top of J3. Iwaki almost went ahead in the 41st minute through a vicious piece of shooting from Masaru Hidaka, which cannoned off the crossbar. Moments later, they did take the lead. Yuto Yamashita's corner met with a header by Rei Ieizumi, which homekeeper Kazuki Hattori fumbled over the line. 4 minutes into the second period and Iwaki were able to take a pretty similar route to goal. Another Yamashita corner headed in at the near post for an own goal by Kai Sasaki. Yamashita then made it a hat-trick of assists when in the 58th minute he floated in yet another corner for Ryo Arita to head past the hapless Hattori. 5 minutes after that, it was 4-0, a neat Iwaki passing move cutting open the left-hand side of the Vanrare defence. Arita and Riku Saga combined to set up Eiji Miyamoto for a composed finish inside the far post. In the 69th minute, Saga slung in another cross which bounced unimpeded through to the far side and Arita, who made no mistake from close range. Final score, Hachinohe 0, Iwaki 5. Desperately disappointing for Vanrare off the back of their win at Matsumoto last time out. Iwaki, for their part, looking at least a division better than their opponents. When you bear in mind the recent form of both teams, it's no surprise that Saturday's other remaining game, Kamatamari Seneki against Tegevajaro Miyazaki, ended level. Miyazaki took the lead in the 29th minute when a low cross by overlapping right-back Masaki Ogawa was deflected in by Keitaro Iori for an own goal. Shunsuke Ueda then kept the visitors in front with a string of fine saves, and with 19 minutes left, it looked like Tegevajaro had gone 2-0 up, only for a scrambled goal from Kaede Shinbo's corner to be disallowed because reasons. Then in the 82nd minute, Kamatamare's Kentaro Shigematsu fired it across goal and Masatake Nishimoto got his head to the ball to get it over the line through a crowd of players. Nishimoto's first J3 goal for more than 2 years. Substitute Kakeru Aoto ballooned a late chance over the bar for the home side, and so it ended Seneki 1, Miyazaki 1. Kamatamari bring to an end a run of 4 straight losses. Tegevajaro haven't won for 2 months and so presumably will be happy with an away point, but on current evidence, these are 2 of the division's weakest teams.
J-Talk Extra Time.
The other five round 20 matches were on Sunday the 14th, including the biggest game of the round in Kagoshima United against Matsumoto Yamaga. In the starting lineups, there was a big call by Kagoshima's Naoto Otake, putting new loanee Kenya Onodera straight into the team at centre-back, while Rei Yonezawa was missing from the squad for the first time all season. For Matsumoto, Hiroshi Nanami gave youth a chance with starts for Ayumu Yokoyama, Yusuke Kikui and Sho Sumida. Yokoyama fielded alongside former Kagoshima striker Lukao. And early on, it looked like Otake had it right as in the 7th minute, Atsuki Satsukawa hit a high ball into the Yamaga area. Onodera headed it down and Kenta Hirose swept it in on the half volley. With Matsumoto providing little in the way of threat, the home side went 2-0 up on 35 minutes. Satsukawa again feeding it in from the left for Koki Arita, who evaded the challenge of Masato Tokida and tucked it past Victor from 6 yards. Jubilation for the biggest Kagoshima home crowd of the season, 5,432. But Yamaga clawed their way back into the match during first half injury time. Lukao sending in a low ball from the right. Kazuhiro Sato laying it off for Yokoyama to strike a 15-yard shot that deflected off Hirose and past Fuma Shirasaka. 2-1 and all to play for at the break. And it was Matsumoto who came out all guns blazing to pull level in the 49th minute. Couldn't have been simpler. A high cross from Yota Shimokawa and Lukao easily beat Onodera to head in his first J-League goal since November 2020. With the game now level, which team could go on and finish the stronger? Nanami may have given youth a chance in the starting lineup, but Otake had it on the bench. And in a bid to turn things around, he threw on four players aged 22 and 23. And in the 87th minute, one of those substitutes, Shunsuke Yamamoto, laid it off for another, Yuto Kide, to strike a low shot that beat Victor at the near post. And then, in the last minute of the 90, Matsumoto seemed to implode when Ryo Toyama, under pressure from Kide, played a dangerous high ball across his own penalty area, which centre-back Yuya Ono, in trying to control a difficult pass, succeeded only in kicking it onto his own arm to give away a penalty. Yamamoto sent Victor the wrong way. Kagoshima sealed the win. Final score, Kagoshima 4, Matsumoto 2. A vital match for the home side, and they came through it. Yamaga couldn't see the game out. A disastrous last few minutes. And the excitement and the goals did not stop there, as the match between Ehime FC and Gainare Tottori turned out to be history-making for the home side. Kiyotaka Ishimaru's Ehime have recovered from a slow start to the season and came into the game as one of J3's form teams. And against Gainare, they started well. In the 10th minute, Motoki Ohara winning what looked a soft penalty after minimal contact from Hibiki Nagai, and then getting up to convert the spot kick. This was but the start of a long afternoon for Nagai and his defensive colleagues. It was 2-0 on 21 minutes, Takeshi Kondo floating in a ball from the right, and Riki Matsuda getting ahead of Nagai for a stylish first-time shot past Ken Tajiri. That's four in the last four games now for Matsuda. Tottori did manage to get themselves a foothold in the game shortly afterwards. Naoya Uozato getting round the back and sending it across for Ryuji Sawakami to head in his third of the season. But in the 29th minute, Ehime restored their two-goal lead. Asahi Yada looping a ball into the box where Hiroto Tanaka placed his header beyond the reach of Tajiri. Surely a more combative defensive unit than Gainare would have prevented a chance like that. 3-1 it stood at half time, and we jump ahead to the 68th minute when Ehime simply moved through the heart of the Tottori back line as from Kenta Tokushige's long goal kick, Matsuda got the better of Junya Suzuki to set up Shigeru Yokotani for a controlled finish. Gainare already looked as if they couldn't wait for the match to end, but there was still plenty of time for things to get worse. And two more Ehime goals quickly followed. First, when Shunsuke Motegi charged into the area and was brought down by Takumi Baba, awarded a straight red card 60 seconds after coming on as a sub. Motegi himself scored the penalty. Then, when a clever back heel from Yokotani set up Toshiya Takagi for a low drive from the edge of the area to make it 6-1, a distinct sense of the training match about this one. A seventh for the mighty Mikans came 3 minutes from time. More dreadful defending from Gainare, who did nothing to stop Ryo Sato moving pretty tentatively forward, and then, when he was 25 yards out, realising he might as well give it a try with his left foot. Paying scant attention to the rules of podcast narrative structure, Tottori did then pull one back in stoppage time, Meguru Odagaki volleying in after Tokushige had parried a header from Senoo. Good work and some actual determination by substitute Kei Sakamoto in the build-up to this one. Final score, Ehime 7, Tottori 2. History-making indeed for Ehime. The first time they've ever scored 7 in a J-League game. Also, the first time they've ever won 5 J-League games in a row. Gainare, who, lest we forget, beat Gifu 4-0 in round 19, not only a complete shambles, but seemingly with no motivation to be any better. Like Ehime, AC Nagano Parseiro and Katari Toyama are both among the group of teams in the chasing pack just below the top four. They met at the Nagano U Stadium, where the only goal of the game came midway through the first half, a breakdown in communication between Katari's Shoma Kamata and Tepe Usui, leaving them open to a counter-attack. Naoki Sanda stole possession and the ball fell to Hiroki Yamamoto, who advanced on goal and crashed home a left-foot shot from 20 yards. And subsequent to that, it was Parseiro who came closer to scoring again. Yuki Morikawa clipping the outside of the post after a mazy run that left Usui scrabbling to stay on his feet. Sanda having a good shout for a penalty when his close-range shot appeared to strike the arm of Toyama captain Makoto Rindo. Katare's best chance took place 7 minutes from time, Naoto Ando's snapshot bringing a good save from the home side's stand-in keeper Kim Min-ho. Final score, Nagano 1, Toyama 0. Yuki Stouff's hard-working Parseiro gathering momentum as the season approaches its final stretch, while over at Katare, Nobuyuki Ishizaki's side too often seems less than the sum of its parts. Looking for revenge for the 5-0 home defeat last month, FC Gifu had the lion's share of first half possession at FC Imabari, but failed to take advantage, rarely forcing a save out of Shu Mogi. The hosts duly nicked a goal in the 45th minute through Kazaki Nakagawa, who collected a pass from Takafumi Yamada, skipped round Takumi Fujitani and fired an angled shot inside the far post. Fujitani was at the centre of two key moments in the second half, early on when he had a header disallowed for what must have been a very narrow offside, and then again in the closing moments when he picked up a second yellow card for a professional foul on Marcus Indio. All that aside, Imabari could have made it 2-0 on a couple of occasions, but found keeper Kazushige Kirihata on good form for Gifu. And thus the game ended, Imabari 1, Gifu 0, and when Imabari get their noses in front, they tend to stay in front. 5 defeats in the last 6 now for Gifu. And finally for round 20, YSCC Yokohama came out of the home game against Gidoansk Kyushu with their third victory of the season. The hosts had a goal disallowed after half an hour, Shuntaro Kawabe straying offside when he tucked in the rebound from Yumemi Kanda's shot, saved by Yuki Kato. And the match was heading for a goalless draw until stoppage time when Kawabe cut inside and fed Tomoya Hayashi, who turned past Takeshi Kawano and struck a shot which Kato somehow let squirm through his fingers and across the line. The Gidavance keeper responded with anguish, his teammates with disbelief. There was nothing but joy and delight for YSCC's players, staff and supporters. Final score, YSCC 1, Kitakyushu 0. A deserved win indeed for Kei Hoshikawa's team. Gidavance again lacking a goal threat without Yuya Takazawa. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 20, noting that Fujieda, Fukushima, Numazu and Sagamihara all have games in hand. The top six teams are Iwaki with 42 points, Kagoshima have 41, then it's Fujieda and Matsumoto with 38, Ehime 37 and Toyama 36. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Sanuki in 15th place with 18 points. Then it's Hachinohe with 16, Tottori 15, and still bottom, but now with 11, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 21 fixtures this weekend. And there are five games on Saturday the 20th of August. J3 frontrunners Iwaki host a prefectural derby with Fukushima. Second place Kagoshima will look for revenge for their shock defeat in round 17 as they go to Sagamihara. Hoping to keep going their winning run, third placed Fujieda travel to Gifu. It's sixth against fifth, neither side out of it, but both needing points. Toyama against Inform Ehime. Nagano still have a chance too. They're at Hachinohe. The other four matches are on Sunday the 21st. Fourth placed Matsumoto head straight back down south to take on Kitakyushu. Imabari can pick up more points as they host a Shikoku derby with Sanuki. Can Tottori bounce back from their heavy loss in round 20? They go to Miyazaki. And YSCC have the opportunity for a second straight win there at home to Numazu. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.